As we just heard, President Bush argues that one reason for pulling out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty is that the pact is a relic of the Cold War. Another legacy of that era, the bloated, top-heavy, overpriced U.S. military. That description is courtesy of Greg Easterbrook, senior editor of The New Republic. In the current issue, he writes that while some reform to the U.S. armed services could be a good thing, credit for the military success so far in Afghanistan is due precisely to the fact that the big, clunky Cold War machine has not changed too much.
When you look at the performance of the military in the years since the end of the Cold War, critics of all stripes, left and right, have said the military has to get smaller, lighter, cheaper, more flexible, abandon these heavy armored vehicles that were designed to stop the Warsaw Pact and the Fulda Gap, we'll switch to technology and we'll cut many programs. Thank goodness that didn't happen. Our military has done astonishingly well on the battlefield since the end of the Cold War, because all that expensive, complicated stuff designed to fight the Russians when used against lesser foes works spectacularly well.
You suggest that one of the reasons that the military establishment has been successful in moving so fast and getting the forces and equipment and whatnot into Afghanistan in just a matter of weeks has to do with something that people have been very critical about, what is called the tooth-to-tail ratio. Could you explain that?
The tooth-to-tail ratio is 11 to 1, that there are 11 people involved in logistics for every one person who actually carries a weapon on the battlefield or flies a fighter plane. You hear that number, you say, well, that's pretty bloated, isn't it? And yes, it is a bloated number. But because we have so many people involved in logistics, our logistics system is remarkable. We moved all that stuff into the Afghan theater on very short notice, successfully, without planes crashing or smashing into each other. In the Gulf War, we moved more material and stuff and weight to the Persian Gulf area in 6 months than we moved in the 2-year preparation for the Normandy invasion. Only one other nation besides the United States has even attempted distant combat in the post-war years, and that was Britain during its brief campaign of the Falklands. We do it on a regular basis, and it takes a cumbersome, expensive logistical system to do so.
One of the cumbersome, expensive systems that helps project power are the carriers, mobile, essentially, airfields that sail around the world with their groups. That's another artifact of the Cold War that people have been trying to shrink.
Yes, everyone looks at the Navy and says we have 12 supercarrier battle groups, not just the carriers, but the ships that accompany them. Each of them phenomenally huge, the size of a medieval town, very expensive, a system that was originally designed to attack the former Soviet Union through the Northern Seas. The original foe no longer exists, so why can't we get rid of these carriers? Well, 12 carriers in the fleet, they can't all be at sea at once. Roughly, you can have one at sea for every one that's in port, because they have to rotate, be refitted, the crews need leave, and so on. To maintain a 12-carrier fleet allows us to have 6 operational at any given time. We're using all 6 of them right now. Yes, this is a Cold War relic, but it turned out to be very useful if we're going to oppose evil governments throughout the world. Now, if we decide to withdraw from international affairs, then obviously we don't need 12 supercarrier battle groups. But if we're going to intervene in the world, this stuff is useful.
President Bush appeared to be saying that he's still for remodeling the American military into some kind of light, flexible, lightly armed, fast fighting force, very different from the kind of big, cumbersome machine that we've been talking about. Do you have any sense that what has happened here might change that, or is that just, are we just going down that road?
There are two camps of criticism of the current military. One is the camp that wants it to get light and flexible and get rid of its armor and heavy weapons and use only light weapons, imagining somehow that urban warfare of the future will just be pistol against pistol. The only time the U.S. military has failed since the end of the Cold War was in Somalia, and that is the one place where they followed the dictums of the light, flexible reformers. We sent in lightly armed troops, only the weapons they could carry, no air cover, no armor. They got wiped out, and it was also a complete American policy failure. The light and flexible approach would abandon the advantage that we can manufacture for ourselves by having huge cumbersome machines in the field that no one else has.
Greg Easterbrook, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Greg Easterbrook is a senior editor of The New Republic.